shine, Atlanta. This is the Morning Shift. I'm Bo Morgan. They call me Squid, but he's the All-American National Champion, former Atlanta Falcon, Michael Don't Ask Him, with the P stands for Johnson. She's a tofu taster, an improv queen, the first lady of Atlanta baseball, Miss Allie Mack. We have Gordon Robinson here on the ones and twos live with us at McDonald's in West Midtown. And back at home, we have little Garrett saying my pleasure as he does everything we need from him. Thank you, Garrett, for all of your hard work.
I can't believe
good morning.
You just demean him like that.
Come in with the little Garrett. Little
Garrett. What if he called you Little Bo?
I've been called Little Bo before. You think that?
Beside yourself.
I was listening to the Hometown Take this morning. Garrett was filling in. Garrett, you were saying you're taller than a quarterback, right? Which quarterback were you talking about?
Oh, Bryce Young, the guy that we're playing on Sunday.
There
no,
we go.
I disagree.
Sure.
I've met Bryce Young. You're not taller than him. You're taller than Kyler Murray, though. I'll give you that.
Oh, I'm definitely taller than him. I will take that.
Bryce Young is I do believe Bryce Young is a little bit taller than you. But you've got Kyler and his odd pictures on Instagram. So you've got him beat. So that's
I'll take what
just
I can
more
get.
Quarter. Hey, you're taller than more
30,
quarterbacks than me.
As long as I'm not 33. That's all I care about.
What?
Number 33 on the rank of tallest. You know, like oh. All 32 are taller than me.
I thought we were talking about age here. I was like, dude, that's not a bad age.
I was like, I'm 42. What are you trying to say?
I still got a couple years before I get to 33. Don't worry.
Good for you, Garrett. Good for you.
I love it, man.
And we're off in at a stall. Yeah,
it's a fair foul Friday, man.
Well, here is what happened since we were last on air. The Bills have beat the Dolphins at home, 31-21. That makes the Dolphins 0-3. Bills complete opposite, 3-0. And unfortunately, the Atlanta Dream were eliminated from the postseason last night by the Fever. Heartbreaking loss, 87-85 at home. And the social media drama continues between Trey Young and Patrick Beverley. Patrick Beverley, Bo covered this yesterday, dropped a video first taking shots at Trey. Trey then released a video going back at him and asking him to state a source. Now, just hours ago, Patrick released a new video last night claiming that everyone who gets near Trey gets fired. I'm sure this is just to be continued at this point. We'll keep an eye on it. But let's get to what's really important today. It is Falcons Friday, and we are live from McDonald's on Northside Drive. But let's go over the keys for the game that the Falcons are up against this weekend in Charlotte. What do the Falcons have to do to get a win, guys?
I think that we've spent the entire week, right, talking about the red zone percentage and things like that. Really, we've only scored one red zone touchdown, and it was Michael Penix stretching, you know, his arm across the goal line by about 3 inches on fourth down. So I think that's the one thing I'll be focused on. And that's not necessarily a Carolina matchup thing. That is just a overall health of the offense, overall health of the team kind of thing. But there's many, many routes. I don't know, Bo, I think you kind of feel this way. We're 2 weeks in. I don't know that we know for sure what either one of these teams are. There's been some good from Carolina. There's been some bad. There's been some bad from the Falcons at times. There's been a lot of good as well. So we'll see what kind of how you know happens and how it all plays out.
Would you agree that Carolina looks better on film than their results have been?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I tend to think so too. And I tend to, you know, you think about it as dominant as you walk away from Sunday night feeling, right? Like we dominated them on defense. We might not have scored touchdowns, but we kind of had our way offensively with them. And but then I look back and I'm like, we are not playing very clean on offense. I think that we had a dominant performance because of the way you ran the ball. But I don't feel, and I'm not trying to be that guy, but if you go back and you kind of watch stuff and you talk to people, it doesn't look like they're running crisp routes, right? The route tree looks a little bit like it just doesn't look like it's as good as it can be. You're having unacceptable, honestly, penalties inside the red area, which is leading to getting behind the chains, which is leading to field goals. But you say that, and you're not turning the ball over, though. So it's been sloppy, probably more than anything. I don't know if clean is the word, but it's just been sloppy at times, and it's limited your output.
Yeah, I completely agree with what you're saying, and I'll also point out the fact that you just asked me, do they play better on film, the Carolina Panthers? Absolutely, and one of the biggest reasons is because take our sloppiness penalty-wise and multiply it times two, because they're not only sloppy with penalties, they've been sloppy with turnovers.
Yeah.
And that's one of the biggest things that really has separated us and the way we're able to go about our business. So, I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see it match up. I mean, I think if you just look at down in and down out, just scrimmage type plays, they're just as good as the Falcons. But like I said, when you see Bryce Young fumble against a pass rush, when you see their lack of ability to get home with some of their younger pass rushers as opposed to the ones we have, that's been interesting. But I think everybody kind of feels the same way, and maybe I'm overstepping my bounds in speaking for Falcons fans, but it's I think as we've kind of gone through the week and we've gone back and watched the tape, I've watched it three times now, I kind of look at it and go, did we just pick on J.J. McCarthy? Is it really – are we really that good of a pass rush, or did we just pick on a guy? And that's not to take anything away from what our pass rush is. We haven't been able to pick on people in the past. But I think when you start stretching it out over the next 15 games, I think that's a fair question.
Well, I think that you're not as good as you think you are at pass rush – which Sunday night showed, but you're also not as inept as you showed against Tampa as far as getting the quarterback on the ground.
For sure.
I think you played, I don't want to say two extremes, but you played two kind of extremes as far as pocket presence and escapability. The fact, though, is that you sit here and you go, after two games, the one thing I can say that we've done is have constant pressure. James Pierce is on the top of every rookie list defensively, right, mm-hmm. about pressure and all these things. And it splash plays was one I saw yesterday. And it's basically, it's all these things like pressure, sacks, this force. And there's a lot of analytics into it. And a lot of it's just, you know, minutia. But the reality is we haven't seen that. And the other thing is we are a team that lost to a Minnesota team at home 2 years ago who traded for a guy on Thursday afternoon. He didn't know his center's name. He had never touched his.
That was crazy.
The back of his hand had never touched his center's butt, you know. And I know that's weird, but that's how, you know, you take the snap. He'd never taken a snap from the guy. Is what I'm saying. I just said it in a, you know, a way that made you feel awkward, and that was the point. But that's how bad it was, and you couldn't get him on the ground.
Yeah.
You lost. You know, we've covered it. So there's a lot to be positive about. But I think the one thing I would say is you have made steps from the training camp to the preseason, from game one to game two. Go take another step. Go take a guy that's prone to turnovers. Go take a defense that you can run on, right? They're giving up like 130 yards, I think, on the ground right now.
Yep.
So go take what they're doing and use it against them. Whatever they try to do to stop you, do the opposite. And that's what our offense has shown this year.
Well, yeah. And you guys have been studying film since, what, Monday, Tuesday, since basically the game finished last Sunday. And you've been looking at Carolina as well. Now, with your years, I mean, Mike, obviously you've got years with the Falcons. Bo, you've been when did you start traveling with the Falcons?
2012.
Okay, so you've been traveling with the Falcons since 2012. So you have a good eye for what's going on the field, kind of the strategy that's happening. What kind of questions do you still have lingering in your mind as we head up to Charlotte?
First of all, I have a ton of questions about the ability of our offensive line to be on the same page. And I know that sounds crazy because of how well Bijan did, but how many times have we talked about the first four plays last week as part of the script? Bijan goes for 25. I mean, we're in the red zone before Bijan even gets a breather. It's four straight run plays. There were multiple missed blocks. Not missed blocks, misidentification inside of the front seven, and they just could not come downhill and take advantage of it. And that's a head nod to Bijan Robinson, but we can't count on that happen every single week. And I know that Charlie Warner's a little bit dinged up as it is, so hopefully whoever has been in those situations in practice, they've all been able to get on the same page for.
Yeah, I have a lot of questions for you on that. The one thing we didn't take into account with Ryan Neuzel stepping in is when he did play last year, he played with Kirk. And so I wonder how that communication worked with Kirk Cousins, and is there something – and I'm not blaming Penix on this. This is not what I'm saying, but was Kirk seeing stuff that maybe Penix hasn't seen yet and hasn't grasped as far as NFL defenses, which helped him with Neuzel? Because – I don't think we've seen the best from Bergeron yet.
Yeah.
I don't think we've seen the best from Lindstrom. And I don't think we've seen the best from Neuzel. Is there – those three guys are going to be as important? Y'all talked about week one with Vita Vea. I'm telling you, Derrick Brown might be better than Vita Vea. He just might play for a lesser team. And they do different things, though. That's very important to understand. They do different things. But Derrick Brown is, and Lindstrom has had trouble with him in the past. And so that communication for those three guys is going to be extremely important, and that concerns me.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt about it. And this could be a 10-minute conversation, honestly, about the way that offensive lines and quarterbacks and running backs and H-backs go about their business and identification as they approach the line of scrimmage. I honestly don't think Michael Penix has anything to do with the problems that I saw. I don't think he is even paying attention to what Ryan Neusel or Chris Lindstrom, who are calling the middle linebacker or who are calling the will linebacker. I think they are just literally talking to Charlie Warner and possibly Bijan Robinson. I think if Michael Penix is walking up going, hey, we have a run play, we're going left, we're going right, I need to know where I hand it off. You guys do what you do in terms of identification, and I think the hiccups have come in. And I got to make sure I don't get too deep in the weeds. The hiccups have come in the fact that we've seen five-man fronts, we've seen four-man fronts, we've seen three-man fronts. So when you do that, however you take guys away, if you have a three-man front, that's an added linebacker. If you have a five-man front, that's one less linebacker. So identifying those guys and being able to understand our kind of run lanes on wide zone, I think, has given us some problems.
Well, I know we got to get the break, so I'll just present this, and only you can think about it during the break, and then because obviously we're live from the West Midtown McDonald's here, but how are they having trouble picking up stunts? Because it appears that way of processing them and negotiating, switching and stuff up front. How does that get fixed? And how do you – is there a way to recognize that pre-snap?
Yeah.
Cool. That's what we'll get to.
Think about that. We're also going to hear from Jeff Ulbrich. He spoke to the media yesterday, and he's been getting compliments all week. Now we get to hear from the source on what they've been preparing for this Sunday. That is next, live from McDonald's on Northside Drive on Sports Radio. 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game. We are the Morning Shift. I'm Allie Mack with Mike Johnson, Bo Morgan. We are live from McDonald's on Northside Drive in West Midtown. Stop on by and have breakfast with us. Garrett is in for Dylan today, back at the station. This was a beat drop that Dylan should have mentioned in his top five Tuesday.
Pretty good one.
Oh, that's a good call.
It's a pretty good beat drop. I mean,
did he do any other ones that were the beginning of songs, though?
I don't think so.
The ones he did a good job of, like, being mid-song and kind of being that last, like
– it's that bridge.
Yeah, that last, like, kind of hammer
moment.
Drop. Speaking of being live from here, did you hear, Bo, this morning when somebody walked in and was like, oh, I wanted to come see the Don? And Bo was like, hey, man. And he was like, Mike.
I was just trying to be.
I was just trying to be polite and speak to the gentleman. And Mike wants that. Like I'm, you know, like
it was funny.
He's a nice man.
It was funny.
You know, I'm not going to pile on too much because I feel like Squid Nation is going to show up today.
Well, we always do.
Right.
I mean, we always do.
Yeah. That's because the mafia is going to work. You know what I mean?
Oh, so, yeah. Shots fired.
That's weird.
Let me tell you something.
Tell me.
I'm going to play nice today. I'm going to play nice today.
Don't take the bait. I hear you.
Well, it is a Falcons Friday. The Falcons head to Charlotte on Sunday. They stand at 1-1. Would love to make that 2-1. Pre-game show with Mike and Bo kicks off at 11 a.m. on Sunday. Bo, get back to what you were covering just a moment ago.
Well, yeah, we were talking about, you know, the communication up front with the offensive line, and it feels like we've had an issue recognizing, handling, handing off in pass protection with stunts where, you know, a guy basically will start on the outside and he'll loop around as another guy kind of the defensive tackle next to him will kind of go towards the tackle. He'll loop around and try to get basically in the gap there. And, you know, we saw a sack come off of one last week, Mike, where it looked like Bergeron – kind of got shoved into Jake. It didn't switch, and Jake couldn't get around, and Grenard got in there for the sack.
Yeah.
And I was basically saying, you know, is that something – I don't think that's something that's easily identifiable pre-snap. That's normally something you can't identify. But there is a way to process that, to kind of go through it and pass those off when they happen. And where is the breakdown coming? How do we fix that? And how – you know, and – maybe is there a way? Am I wrong on the fact that you can identify pre-snap?
Yeah, I think that and I'm just going to go ahead and be clear here. I don't know exactly what the breakdown is. All I can do is tell you what I've experienced, right? And so sometimes what you're referring to is called a run stunt. The defensive line is doing run stunts up front. These are not passing downs. It's not obvious passing situations like we do where we're twisting defensive linemen at all times trying to get the quarterback. They are running run stunts. Essentially, the one you're talking about, and this has happened twice now, once each game on play-action passes that we've had sacks on. It's one of the dangers of play-action passes is what if they run a run stunt? Everybody's trying to sell the play-action pass, and all of a sudden they make a twist, and you're trying to sell things, and they end up in the backfield. There's two different ways to kind of run block when you're in zone offenses. And I mentioned this to you guys the other day. Charlie Warner's job in our offense is he is taking the place of an offensive lineman in one of the gaps. Now, on any given play, the defense doesn't know which gap that is. Could be backside, could be front side, could be a down lineman, could be a linebacker. That's our entire run game right now. So we're going to run wide zone. Charlie Warner's going to insert somewhere. He's going to take the place of a lineman. It's going to climb up to linebacker, whatever. So what is happening, or what I've always experienced in these situations, is you have two ways of doing this. Number one, and this is the way you want to do it if you can, you identify the down lineman, and you identify who you are double-teaming to at the next level. Could be, hey, we're going to double team this three technique on the backside, and we're going to climb up to the Will linebacker, right? You can identify two guys. Hey, us two have those two. The problem is when they start switching around and start rotating defenses and coming up in blitz looks and running run stunts, all of a sudden it becomes what you call a full zone offense where I am literally just going to stay on my track at a 45-degree angle, and whoever comes into my zone, that's who I'm picking up. I mean, that's literally how you get the term zone offense, right, or wide zone or outside zone. So I'm going to take off on my angle. Whoever folds into my gap, that's who I'm going to block. There's two different ways of doing it. It's either I have a man-to-man, all right, double teaming up to a guy, or whoever comes into my lane. The Falcons can do it both ways and have shown the ability to do it both ways. The problem is if it's a look you haven't scouted or something that looks a little bit crazy in real time, it's not always that easy to react to, right? And I think that's what you're seeing out of Matthew Bergeron, Jake, Ryan Neuzel. And don't leave Jake out. Jake has had probably two of his worst run-blocking games we've seen out of Jake Matthews. They are getting run-stunted to death, and I think that it's going to continue to happen until they can identify what's wrong and can take care of business on those style of plays.
And real quick, because I know Allie's got some stuff, I just think that you made a very important point about the play action, because if you hear people talk, and I listen to way too much, I guess, but everyone out there in Falcons land, media, fans, they think play action is this great, like, equalizer. They think play action is this thing that if you do it, everything will open up and everything just becomes – but it has to be under center. When they're running these stunts like this, play action is a detriment.
Yeah.
To your and
it can be.
And if you're running it, they ran play action, I think, 7 of 21 pass plays last week. A third of the pass plays was play action. You know, and you're holding the ball longer a little bit. I mean, that's you're waiting for things to develop. Yeah. Most of play action is for downfield action.
Yeah, and
not
all
short
it is,
stuff.
All it is really is it's play action pass. You're kind of selling the run on your first two steps, and then it turns into pass protection. What's important for these guys, and I'm going to focus on Jake because I think he's had the roughest go of it so far, you have to turn it into a run block, right? If you're a defensive end, you are trying to sell run and then pass check. If he knifes inside towards the center, all of a sudden you have to turn your own shoulders and turn into a run block and see if you can just bury him down where the center's at. And that's what Jake's going to have to do. You get on two different levels. Things are going left. Things are going right. So it can be a detriment, and simply because – the quarterback's back is turned on play action passes, right? He's not seeing what's going on in front of him. And I think they're going to continue to ramp up things like that, the defenses we see over the next few weeks. Specifically, let's just call out like a Dan Quinn. I mean, guys like that that know how to approach these kind of offenses, they're going to continue to try to pick on us until we are able to prove with guys like Elijah Wilkinson and Ryan Neuzel that we can pick these kind of things up.
Well, and switching over to the defense just for a moment, because one guy that's been talked about a lot this week is Jeff Ulbrich. A lot of fans happy with that performance Sunday night against the Vikings. And Jeff spoke to the media yesterday on how those rookies are doing.
The guys, you know, they executed the plan elitely at times, you know, from a pass rush standpoint. And then there was times where guys just were winning, you know, and it's been cool to see, especially – some of these younger guys, as they really start to learn how to rush and how to learn how to rush in unison as a group, there's been huge improvements in that area. You know, we still got a ways to go to get where we need to be, but it was a promising outing for us from that standpoint.
Yeah, I just think first and foremost the number one difference that you can immediately notice just by watching a pre-snap play with them is. where their DBs are lined up and how they're playing right off that, right closer to the ball, which is automatically not giving a free release to the receivers, which allows the quarterback to get the ball out, and I mean literally like zero time. And so that's one thing. They've also got that they've got aggressive guys. This defense is so attacking down like upfield, I guess you could say it, where they're attacking the offensive lineman kind of the way we're getting attacked, Mike.
Yeah.
And you've got some guys. He's got a lot of this defense. I don't know if it's how much it's been talked about, but this is as fast as we've seen a defense since 2016, 2017.
Yeah.
I mean, you haven't had a middle linebacker this athletic and this fast in like Devon Diablo since Deion Jones.
Yeah.
When he was young in his prime. You know, the two guys or the three guys they have on the edge are all as big, if not bigger and quicker than I think Vic Beasley was, and more aggressive. They play more aggressive. So, you know, Beasley had good years those years. So, that's the number one thing. But you go back to Jesse. Whatever he's doing and calling this defense, it is not over. It's not overly complicated. The fact that they're confused pre-snap. I have not seen the pre-snap lineup issues that we've seen in the past.
The statement that sticks out to me that Jeff Olbert just made, Allie, is when he said we're playing in unison.
Mm-hmm.
Oh man, chef's kiss to that, right? Because so many times you see. You know, we'd run a blitz or a stunts the last couple of years, and it's like one guy gets in the backfield and he can't make the play, and then all of a sudden the quarterback steps up and rolls out, and nobody else is there. We've done such a good job of knowing where each other are, and he, you know, he started off talking about the rookies, and that's the biggest thing is it's not just so much, hey, edge rushing. It's knowing when to run these twist stunts, knowing who you're stunting with. Is it a linebacker? Is it a D tackle? Who else is coming along with you? Are they, you know, is it a safety blitz? We've seen, you know, obviously Billy Bowman gets a sack in week one. So it's just knowing where everybody else is at and knowing where your help is and playing off of those guys, I think, that has been so impressive through the last couple of weeks from this defense.
Well, and Ulbrich also talked about, you know, how he's preparing for this Sunday. We can hear some of that audio a little bit later on. It is Falcons Friday. We're going to be getting you ready for Sunday's game all throughout the show. But it's also a dark horse kind of weekend in college football for week four. So we're going to get into that. We're also going to play, though, for the Mac drop. Name that Falcon, and since Bo is sitting directly next to me, I'm going to have to turn my computer because I know I look at you, I see what's on your screen. I'm going to have to turn around. That'll be next, live from McDonald's on Northside Drive on Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. Tomorrow is Saturday. It's Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game with the Morning Shift. I'm Allie Mack with Mike Johnson, Bo Morgan, and we are live from McDonald's on Northside Drive in Atlanta. Please stop on by and have breakfast with us. Garrett is in for Dylan today, back at the station, and Gordon, of course, is keeping us on air out here in McDonald's. Now, as we get into these college football matchups, keep in mind, Bo and Mike will make their picks for this weekend's games at 7:40, and then we'll see how they do on Man Up Monday. I'm curious how you're going to like my random pick of the week for you guys.
Oh, my gosh.
You threw me off last week.
Do we have to count that one? I mean, guess we do, but
that
is rough.
It all gets counted. It all gets counted. All right, so previewing week four in college football, kind of a dark horse weekend. We've got number 17 Texas Tech at number 16 Utah.
I think this is – such an interesting game for so many different reasons. First of all, completely contrasting styles. Texas Tech is – they remind me of old-school Texas Tech. They're going to kind of spread things out. They're going to use their athletes in space. It's like, you know, mid-2000s Mike Leach Texas Tech in a lot of different ways. And they've got some good players. I think when you look at the way they've gone about their business, you know, they've really utilized the NIL aspect and have really made some good moves. Utah, on the other hand – you know, kind of a gritty team, kind of a blue-collar team. They brought over Devin Dampier from New Mexico. They also brought over his offensive coordinator, which seems to be the in vogue thing. You know, Oklahoma did that this year with John Mateer. That's the same way Vanderbilt got things lined up a couple of years ago with Diego Pavia. So I'll keep my eyes on that. But I don't know right now. I mean, this is number 17 versus number 16. I don't know that we know what either one of these teams are, honestly. I think this is kind of like a find-out kind of game about both these squads as they move forward.
It's kind of weird with the Utah team not having to hear about Cam Rising being there because he seemed to play there for like 10 – he's like a 10-year veteran of Utah. Texas Tech has been they've spent a lot of money on their football and their program, and they've had a lot of NIL. So they're clearly trying to kind of break through to that. And it's good to see them kind of high flying again. they've got to, you know, some people think that the collision course for the Big 12 is Texas Tech and Iowa State. And that would be kind of a crazy thing to think about, you know, but that's the departure of the Oklahoma and Texas is of that conference. So it should be a really good game. I couldn't tell you who I think will win.
Yeah.
But I think it's got a game to, like you said, it could be a fun, you know, one to watch as far as how they play.
I don't think there's any doubt about it. Now, I think the one thing to keep you know, we always complain about early games, and Big Ten complains about the noon games. Dude, this game is in Salt Lake. It's a noon Eastern start.
Which means it's a 10 10 a.m.
Well, that is brutal.
Did you see Oregon kick off last week? They with the big noon kickoff, yeah. And it was a 9 a.m. start.
Wow.
What are we doing?
It's crazy.
What are we doing? Why are we starting football games at 9 a.m.?
That makes me sick to my stomach. I'll also throw this one in as well. Morton, the quarterback from Texas Tech, guys, he's like 75 yards away from 1,000 yards passing already. Like, wow. Unbelievable the numbers they're putting up. Over 600 yards a game they're putting up at Texas Tech. So,
how do you say his first name?
I'm not even going to try.
Bayron?
Yeah, I don't know.
Bayron?
Something like that.
I don't know.
Notice how I just said his last name.
Well, that's why.
It's the tricks of broadcasting, Bo.
I know, man. Can't pull the curtain back on this thing.
All right, we've also got Arizona State at Baylor, 7:30 on Fox.
Yeah. Dude, go ahead. Because I don't know.
Well,
I thought I knew what Arizona State was coming into the season. I don't know after watching them play, obviously, against Mississippi State. The same thing is with Baylor. I thought I knew what Baylor was after watching them play Auburn in week one. Dude, your guess is as good as mine for this one.
Yeah, I think there's a little bit of a hangover for Arizona State. There was, anyways, when they went to Starkville. You know, I think people underestimated – they really, to me, I mean, we knew Sam Levitt's a good player. But he struggled a little bit this year as far as turning the ball over. We already got three interceptions, but – I think people underestimated how reliant they were at times on Cam Scataboo,
yeah,
and how much he helped them. But, you know, Baylor is kind of the favorite in this team game. They're obviously 2.5-point favorite. It's in Waco. So I'm with you, though. But Sam Robertson has been very good job of taking care of the football, and they look like they're a team that could contend as well for – the same thing for this Big 12. It's weird because this feels like a Pac-12, Big 12 matchup, but in reality there is no Pac-12.
Yeah.
There's only a Pac-2. They're awful. And Arizona State is trying to repeat as Big 12 champions, and they have struggled. They struggled a little out of the gate. I think, though, don't underestimate how hard it really is for some teams to go into places like Starkville. I mean, I think we think of as Mississippi State, as SEC fans, as kind of a pushover. But the reality is that's a different place to go into and play.
Yeah.
Those cowbells ring high. They got a biscuits and gravy wrestling match at a local club going on there in 2 weeks. I mean, that place is different. All right?
Yeah.
You just don't go into Starkville and get a win. So that said, maybe Arizona State is a little bit better than we realized. It was just, you know, one of those games.
Yeah, I think that, first of all, I'll have my eyes on Bryson Washington, the running back out of Baylor, back-to-back 100-yard rushing games. And I think that they just go about their business. Now, you look on the other side of the field, Relique Brown, the running back from Arizona State, has been explosive, 8.3 yards per carry. But they also use the quarterback in their rushing attack. And Sam Levitt's been good as well, also over 150 yards rushing. So, I don't know, man. I hopefully we're not picking this one today. I can't even imagine we are, because this is going to be a tough game to see what the outcome actually is, you know, at 7:30 on Saturday night.
Well, it's not met 7:40 yet, so I could change things up before.
You would.
We've also got Tulane at number 13, Ole Miss, 3:30 on ESPN. And Tulane is fresh off a big win over Duke.
Dude, Tulane, just, you cannot credit John Summerall enough with the job he's done down there with the turnovers. It's last year they're good. They get a bunch of guys poached through the transfer portal that are making money at all these SEC and ACC schools now. He turns over half his roster, and they seem to be just as good. I mean, they've dealt with business all the way up. This is a team that plays hard, and if I'm Ole Miss right now, I am a little bit concerned about the team that's rolling in there. Ole Miss, very, very good, and has dealt with business accordingly. But Tulane ain't scared of nobody, and they're going to play like it.
They've dealt with their business, but these games haven't been just – walking away. I mean, I thought that game against Kentucky, where a lot of people thought they were just going to just roll through them, they didn't. I think Austin Simmons is still kind of growing into the role there, what they want him to do. That said, you know, you're at home. You're in Oxford. I mean, you're Ole Miss. This is the kind of game that Lane – Lane Kiffin needs to go ahead and just put away. Now, is there that little bit of letdown because they're peeking ahead against next week, against LSU? Because LSU comes to town next week, and that's going to be a really, really big matchup when it comes to the SEC and kind of deciding who goes to Atlanta. But, like, this is a game that they can't overlook because you got Tulane, you got LSU, then you got an off week with Washington State, and then Georgia and Oklahoma and South Carolina. Yep. This Ole Miss schedule is – we talk about Florida's and Georgia's. This Ole Miss schedule is pretty tough. And then going to Starkville at the end of the year doesn't look as easy. So they have to – we talk about the Falcons, and we have to – we need to go ahead and win the games that we have to win, that we feel like we should win. It's exactly what this is for Ole Miss.
Yeah, I think next week in a lot of ways, I'm glad you brought that up, it's going to be kind of separation Saturday for some of these teams. We're going to find out who actually is good next week with some of the showdowns. Here's a reminder, each Wednesday night, join Damian Day-Day Lewis for Prep Sports Nation, a comprehensive look at the teams and athletes making news in high school sports across the state. It's brought to you by Ingles, low prices, love the savings. That's Prep Sports Nation, Wednesday nights on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
And it is a Falcons Friday, so we're going to play Name That Falcon. Feel free to keep your depth charts today, guys.
Okay, yes.
Because they won't matter.
Oh.
We are playing. We are playing Name That Falcon from the year 2013. Now, Mike, you were with the team at that time, so these are your buddies. Bo, I verified earlier you were traveling with the team at this point.
I was.
Just because I was friends with them doesn't mean I'll be any better at this.
But I was also young, and I don't know how much my memories are from then.
Right.
All right. So, as always, we're going to start with a song. It stems from the year they were born in. So, Garrett, go with number one.
I'm just going to go Matt Bryant. No.
No.
Okay, just go.
You're just going to guess people.
Well, he was like 40 in 2013. So,
Well, you know, you could go with Tony Gonzalez.
That's not a bad idea
that
either.
That is not it.
Oh, man.
So this is Hotel California from the Eagles.
Yeah, that was, what, 78?
77. Very close.
That's what separates the Bows from the rest of us when it comes to this conversation. I would have never known that. Let's see.
6'1", 296.
2013, I'm probably 26.
Is Mike Peterson still on that team?
That I don't know.
Mike Peterson.
All right, so
6'1",
if that's the case, whoever this is in the Mithers. Let's go. Oh, I don't know if he was still on the team. So I was going to say Todd McClure, but he's probably not on that team either.
That
is he?
Todd McClure.
Yes! That would have been his final season.
I thought Mud Duck was at least 301.
Yeah.
I don't know why 01 was in, but I thought he was at least 300 pounds.
206. Right. Probably was at some point in the career.
Garrett, let's go with clue number two. From 1988, Def Leppard, Pour Some Sugar on Me.
Oh, so this is somebody.
So, it'd been 25.
I'm trying to think. Okay.
Matt? Ryan?
No. This is somebody younger than me.
Remember, you can say clue and I'll give you more stats.
Yeah, clue.
5'9", 195.
5'9"?
These are their stats when they're playing.
How about Desmond Trufant?
Nope.
Hey, what was was Anton Smith on that team still?
I don't think he was 195. They were lying if he was listed at 195.
Yeah, he was probably at 185.
195 at 5'9". Let me think. Robert Alford.
No.
Okay. Let me get one more guess. 5'9", 195.
Thomas DeCou was bigger than that.
He's taller than that.
Yeah, I know.
5'9", 195. It's got to be a running back.
How about Eric Weems?
Nope. From Connecticut. Does that help?
Connecticut?
You play with these guys, so you should be embarrassed.
I should be embarrassed. I don't know. I have no idea. Who is it?
It is Robert Reggie McLean.
Wow. And he's still around the area, too. I know he does some coaching work up in the Marietta area.
Remember
well.
When he burst on the scene out of nowhere?
Yeah,
man.
He did. He did. He had a couple years that were just crazy output.
I'm pretty
great
sure.
Great artist, too, though. I think he still paints.
I'm pretty
great
sure artist. He played for the Panthers after he left here for a year or two.
Maybe before and after, because I think that's where he came from. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
All right, let's move on to number three, Garrett.
Okay. Bo, can I get a year?
I mean, it's the 80s, man. I don't know, like 84, 87.
Crazy time,
this is
dude.
Another 1988.
88.
Never going to give you up, Rick Astley.
Oh, man. Okay, clue.
6'2", 264.
6'2", 264. Can I go with Cliff Matthews?
That is not it.
Oh, that was my best guess. He's probably bigger than that. 6'2", 264. We're talking about a defensive end?
Maybe.
Wait a minute. 2013. No, it's not Ray Edwards time.
No, he was already cut.
And he was older than me.
And so was Abe. Abe was gone.
Yeah,
Abe was...
This is somebody younger than me again. This is somebody that played edge that was younger than me.
What was my guy's name?
Went to Central Gwinnett in Lawrenceville.
What? So maybe
it's not Lawrence Sidbury.
Oh, wait a minute. This is no, this isn't Michael Palmer.
Mm-mm.
Because he went to
well, 6'2", 264?
Correct.
Is it Josh Harris? Wasn't that big, was he?
It's not him.
No. All right, I'm gonna have. I don't know. I'm
linebacker, Troy University, number 46.
Oh,
is this Bear Woods?
Jonathan Massaquoi.
Oh my gosh! I cannot believe I forgot that he went to Central Gwinnett.
All right, this last one.
Oh, I'm so mad at myself right now.
Let's go with one last one, real quick, Garrett. Number 5.
You're not doing very well.
No. Golly. All right, Bo, give me a year.
I don't know, man. It's year the 80s check. Again. 89? I don't know.
1987. Whitney Houston, I Want to Dance with Somebody.
Okay, give me the next clue.
66304.
Is that me?
That's you.
I was like, dude, wait a minute. That's my year. Hang on for a second. Yes.
Congratulations.
Way to finish strong. I'm disappointed. I'm so disappointed in myself for the Jonathan Massaquoi one.
I'm just glad you got yourself. I mean, I really
that
am.
An issue.
I really am.
An issue if I'd have been like,
that was a good
Levine
pull that
Toy
she
Lolo.
Put you in there.
Yeah,
now, let me tell you something. We got off
so mad about the Massaquoi. I forgot he went to Central Gwinnett.
Mm-hmm. We got off the bus one year. I don't know where we were, but we were walking in a stadium, and they were doing the network had the camera, and I am literally right beside Levine Toy Lolo, and I was like, God, this is embarrassing.
Was it a lower angle too? Because that's all.
Yeah, it was. They were holding it down, and I was like, someone's going to want to know why Levine is walking with a bearded child.
Coming up, we're going to focus on our Falcons. What are the keys to success in Charlotte? That is next, and we are live from McDonald's on Northside Drive on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.